things happen to people who listen to Radio.
Once we understand the bug, we will defeat it.
Are you ready for
The only good bug is a dead bug.
Shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs, all right?
Some say that a live and let live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
I say kill them all! Yeah!
Put it on and leave it on.
Welcome to Bug Radio, boys and girls. As Dominic Cummings slinks silently out of the front door, we ask how Mr. Johnson will cope without being able to write three words on the back of a fag packet. What are we going to be like when this is over? And does Donald Trump really need to be the president to rule America forever? We're up on iTunes, Spotify, and Threads Radio. That's threadsradio.com. And you can follow us on @BugRadio2020 on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a click, give us a five-star review. To take the rough with the smooth, I'm joined as always by the Stonehenge from Penge, Mr. Kieran Monks Kaufman. How's the plague treating you?
Just getting into some Hitchcock movies. Saw Vertigo the other day. Very twisty. Really keeps you on the edge of the seat till the end. Also Rear Window, which has this great gimmick of you never leave the guy's room, but it doesn't feel that oppressive. Taken receipt of a stationary bicycle, so really racking up the kilometers there. What have you been up to?
Yeah, nothing doing really. Work's quite busy. I was quite impressed by the people at CNN this morning for valiantly churning out another episode of Business Traveler in the current circumstances.
I've had something to do with the Business Traveler series on one or two occasions. And yes, it's very resilient.
Just don't do it really. You know, stay in your yard, have a cup of tea or something. And, yeah, that'll do. So just crack on.
Just quickly, at the top of the show, happy birthday to the virus. I've seen that the first case was reported on November 17, 2019, and we're recording on November 17 of this year, 2020, a year that is now tattooed on our psyches. Mm-hmm. So a lot can be done in a year. Let's make that a lesson.
And let's give it a nice, big, hairy vaccine for its first birthday present.
Yeah, that's thoughtful. That's kind. We're trying to work out what's going on with our shitty government. And Svengali, Talisman, what do people call him?
I can't remember anymore. I can't remember all of them.
There's been a big effort to mythologize Dominic Cummings as this mysterious deep thinker who's... writes these 20,000 word blogs that nobody reads. I can empathize. he's seen as this intellectual undergirding of a largely...
Svengali.
Yeah, of a largely values-free administration. He's been credited with playing a major role in the way the referendum went. And he's produced these two defining slogans: "Get Brexit done" and "Take back control."
Well, so he did "Take back control," and apparently Isaac Levido did "Get Brexit done." But then I've seen some people say that Dominic Cummings did it, so I don't know. Maybe it was like a duet.
Well, he's out now. He's apparently the straw that broke the camel's back is possibly that he was along with Lee Kane, who everybody's attempted to turn into a well-known public figure when nobody had heard of him outside.
I don't know whether they really had time to eulogize him before he got the boot, though, did they?
No, but no one had heard of Lee Kane. And then all of a sudden, everyone was like, can you believe Lee Kane is gone? Lee Kane, so crucial. and then you're like, what? We've lost Lee Kane? Surely not. I mean, everything's tricky. So they've both gone, apparently for uncharitable briefings about one of the prime minister's wives. So that has apparently been enough to result in the situation where Cummings exits Downing Street carrying a box. A lot of speculation, like in Pulp Fiction, what was in the suitcase? What was in Cummings's box? Was it artifacts and trinkets? Was it blackmail material? Was it one of Boris Johnson's children?
Well, presumably he'll explain it all in his blog. There's another part of this, which is that Allegra Stratton, who was no lefty's favourite commentator. She was the one who successfully applied for the job of Prime Minister's spokesman. I mean, the fact that he was soliciting for a spokesman in the first place does beg the question of what it is that he actually does. So she's got that job, and apparently she hates Lee Kane and Dominic Cummings. So apparently she and Carrie have kind of grabbed the steering wheel. And after Trump had gone, once they realized that, you know, the margin was a bit too big for him to rat fuck the count, the whole sort of rhetorical base, the way they've been doing politics basically for the last 4 years, I mean, it's not, the plug isn't completely been pulled, but it's been massively weakened. And he's now got an American president who, by all accounts, doesn't like him at all. And he's got people going around calling him a shape-shifting lizard or whatever. Part of me thinks that they've decided, okay, we're going to need to sort of do some window dressing here. Obviously, sort of telling Obama to piss off during the referendum, that kind of worked for them.
And referring to his Kenyan ancestral dislike of the British.
Yeah.
Not that it would be unreasonable to have ancestral dislike of the British.
Absolutely. But I mean, I'm not sure whether, I mean, that wasn't really the point he was making.
No, not at all, no.
But also, now that because of Brexit, we've just made ourselves so much more reliant on America than we were before, to just have 4 years of an American president just constantly reminding us that instead of a great power sailing the waves once again, influencing stuff, we are just a sort of floating bit of flotsam in the Northeast Atlantic being influenced. There's two or three oil tankers that are going to need turning around. And I can't help thinking that that might have played a small part in it. If somebody knows I'm wrong, please call in.
By popular perception, Cummings was the sort of Stephen Gerrard 2005 of this government, as in the beating heart of the team. So he was, until recently, indispensable. So it was his slogans that were hugely valued and had such an impact. When he famously mocked anyone's regular understanding of the rules with his Barnard Castle eyesight test, that was glossed over in embarrassing Rose Garden scenes.
That was when he became famous.
Yeah. And when we honored him on this podcast, I believe that was an episode that was also broadcast in Jordan. Hopefully our Jordanian listeners have been following this and can breathe a sigh of relief that this satanic spad has finally met his maker in a professional sense. So Cummings was presumably also front and center of the bug plan dealing with the virus. I mean, there was a lot of scandals in the early days about how he was attending these briefings amongst non-political scientists that he wasn't supposed to. So if he's gone, where does that leave the war effort?
I mean, I don't know whether there is a plan.
I mean, I think you're right that the American situation has made a difference. It was noticeable that Boris Johnson has suddenly tried to sort of dust off his 2012 Mayor of London shtick and start talking about emissions and climate change.
He's actually brought in that guy, Ed Lister, who saved his, because it was an absolute mess, his Mayor of London administration initially. And then this bloke, Ed Lister, came in, who's presumably now going to be built up into this, you know, amazing Rasputin part six or whatever. But he's brought that same bloke in now to do some firefighting.
And also, there's howls of anguish from the right, and Big Nige is calling this a betrayal, saying that he wasn't a fan of Cummings. No one will admit to being a fan of Cummings, but clearly he must have been there for some reason.
Toby Young admitted to being a fan of Cummings.
Well, that says a lot, because Toby Young is a sort of tragic figure who writes columns about nobody coming to his birthday. You could say that he was ahead of the game and that now nobody is allowed to go to anyone's birthdays, but it seemed very humiliating. And I know how it goes when you're casting around for some content, you know, desperately scraping a barrel. And then he was forced to monetize the humiliation of, I think it was his best man didn't show up to his wedding. So he's what most people have in mind when they picture a British columnist. And so if he's the only guy that will admit to thinking Cummings is good, then that says something. But probably a lot of other people relied on him too. But anyway, it does seem that Johnson and the government is trying to go in a more humane direction, less of this sort of scorched earth British Trump culture war, Priti Patel, sink all the boats type approach, and more sort of Cameron's.
Yeah, that's presumably what Allegra Stratton and Carrie Simmons want, isn't it? Early Cameronism.
Yeah. Although, if you could say one thing that's defined this administration's battle with the bug, it's been its determination to continue to enrich its friends through this crisis. George Monbiot has been doing a good job of documenting all the contracts that are going to companies that happen to have Tory MPs on the board or as consultants. So
Peter Georgian has been really good in Open Democracy as well about that.
Yeah, so MP Owen Paterson is a consultant for this company, Randox, that does testing kits, which were an expensive failure. Serco has obviously been getting contracts throughout and failing. Consultants, McKinsey.
Wasn't there the Kate Bingham one who hired all these £7,000 a day consultants?
Well, precisely. And then just today it was reported, so that's, what day is it? Tuesday the 17th. A middleman got £21 million for sort of connecting the government to PPE suppliers. So that is, quite...
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, that's a decent gig. Why didn't we think of that? So that seems to have been at the heart of the government's approach, is that in order to defeat the bug, we need to pay our friends.
I mean, I think possibly the most outrageous aspect of Cummings' legacy is this explosion of people talking about big boy pants. Everyone is jumping on the pants wagon. The veteran Tory MP Roger Gale implored the PM to appoint an advisor who wears big boy pants. I reckon Cummings probably wears those kind of massive tent boxers with like spindly legs sticking out, maybe the Superman logo on them somewhere. Like, I can definitely see that. This has hopped across the pond as well, where pants are trousers, we believe. So Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney told Donald Trump to put his big boy pants on and admit he lost. I'd imagine Donald Trump's pants are already pretty generous. And Congresswoman Jackie Speier went on CNN to declare that it was time for the president to put his big man pants on and accept that he's lost. And what I want to know is, what are big man pants? Are they like the one that he wears in that MC Hammer video?
I mean, in a sense, I do get this, that it's difficult to assume responsibility if you're not wearing proper trousers. I mean, I feel significantly less responsible and mature for bumming around in pajamas. And I think while we would take a Trump exit on any terms, it may be a calculation that he's more likely to do so once he's got his trousers on.
But wouldn't big man pants, I mean, if anything, you'd think those sorts of pants would make somebody even more exuberant with their blogs or their conspiracy theories or whatever. I mean, if anything, they should be told to put on some more understated pants.
Diminished.
You know, the sorts of pants that lend themselves to the realization that it's not all about you at the end of the day. You know, there's a plague on.
I hear you. It's possible that his pants are too large already and they need to be downsized. So you're right. This might be a miscalculation that could cost us
Although
all.
There is obviously quite an appetite for these big man pants.
It could be one of those phrases that catches on, like, it's coming home, or mansplaining.
Yeah, would you wear Bug Radio branded big man pants? Bug
Radio. Put it on and leave it on.
So the R number is hovering somewhere between 1.0 and 1.2. So it's starting to come down to around about where it was at the start of September. So the rate of growth is slowing, but the bug is still increasing exponentially, which is not necessarily the easiest thing for people to get their heads around. And roughly one in 85 people currently have the bug in the UK. But in the US, up to 60% of COVID tests are coming back positive in some states. I've got a quote here from somebody called Jody Dering, who's a Black Hawk mum and a senior nurse on an overflowing COVID ward in South Dakota. So she's like dealing with these people all the time and sort of intubating people. And she goes, the ones that stick out are those who still don't believe the virus is real. the ones who scream at you for a magic medicine and that Joe Biden is going to ruin the USA, all the while gasping for breath on 100% Vapotherm. They tell you there must be another reason they're sick. They call you names and ask you why you have to wear all that stuff, because they don't have COVID, because it's not real. And they only stop yelling at you when they get intubated. It's like a fucking horror movie that never ends. So spare a thought. And as regards whether the horror movie might end, according to the Financial Times, the Moderna vaccine, which came out this week, is apparently 95% effective and crucially can be stored at over 0 degrees Celsius for up to 30 days.
And crucially, Rishi Sunak has shares.
Yeah. So that definitely won't be available to anybody in the UK until spring at the earliest, whereas the Pfizer-BioNTech shot, which we discussed on last week's show, could be available by the end of the year, albeit in small numbers. And the UK government has ordered 30 million doses of this Pfizer jab, which I think means 15 million vaccinations because it's a double shot. But it's only ordered 5 million of the new Moderna vaccine, which, as I say, is logistically a walk in the park in comparison. So that might be ominous. We shall see. And just finally, somebody called David QC on Twitter says, interestingly, the word vaccine comes from the Latin vacca, meaning cow. Because since the late 18th century, vaccines have been used to cow the populace into submission with microchips. Which I assume is just a joke, by the way.
Yeah, well, Bug Radio wasn't afraid to call out the mighty Bill Gates the other day when he talked about doing some kind of Q&A session with Parks and Recreation star Rashida Jones. And he said, write in with your big questions. And we challenged him on his plan to microchip us all. And typically, he was too cowardly to respond. We'll let you know if he's willing to come clean. One issue with having limited supplies of the vaccine that actually works relative to some of the ones that are circulating that apparently don't work is it might reawaken the possibility of a zombie scenario. So, I mean, people have been playing with post-apocalyptic situations and sort of gaming out how things might go in worst case scenarios. But if only, say, 1 in 10 of our citizens were able to get an effective vaccine, might they then become sort of hunted for their blood? I mean, with people sort of trying to get their antibody, so tracking down and then feasting on their fellow citizens.
Well, there possibly, but then there could be all sorts of other problems with somebody's blood. I mean, there's all sorts of other kinds of cooties that somebody could have. I mean, if I was scanning, you know, people in the shopping center or whatever and deciding who I was going to suck their blood, it's kind of Russian roulette, isn't it?
I guess, but if this is the priority and this is the disease that's sort of rocketed up the bestseller lists right now, so to speak, so that's the priority. So I think that might be a secondary consideration to your rampaging, bloodthirsty mobs. But hopefully it won't come to that in any case. So given some of these developments, some new vaccines coming along, are we going to get back to a semblance of where we were in last year? Or is it going to be a different kind of permanent new normal? And a lot of the innovation has been in the idea of these cheap tests that you don't have to stick up your nose that cost like a fiver, and then you can go into football matches and nightclubs. But they don't seem to have been able to advance these. And then there's been these other alarming stories about the development of the black market for fake tests. And this is another hustle that I wish Bug Radio had got on board with on the ground floor. So because obviously...
And are people making a lot of money out of that, do you think?
There's enormous demand. And apparently they're in very wide circulation. So they're cropping up in... London, Singapore, New York, and
it reminds me of those people who sell clean piss outside court.
Also a good hustle.
You know, if you're like a drug addict and you're on probation and you've presumably not seen clean piss for 20 years, so sometimes like old people have like carved out a niche, like standing around on the corner selling bottles of piss for you to go into your probation. It's an unglamorous trade, but you know, it does happen.
It's the sort of definitive dirty job, but somebody doesn't have to do it, but if they're entrepreneurial enough. There's been a blow for the traditionalists, a lot of people were pointing to the example of Sweden as a place that had not imposed very severe restrictions. But Sweden has now abandoned its liberty-centric approach, has banned gatherings. Or admittedly, still up to 8 people can gather, but they're closing gyms and indoor spaces and telling people not to host indoors.
So that's an L, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, so that's all pretty bleak. So where are we going to be? I mean, is it just a case of everybody just hanging around until such time as a vaccine happens? If they can get past Lawrence Fox, who has vowed to fight up to 4 policemen if they try and vaccinate him.
I'd quite happily dress up as one of those policemen for that opportunity.
Is it just a case of sort of cowering in fear until then?
To be fair, that is what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think that is right now the current ploy. If it does take until next spring or summer before we've got a vaccine that allows normal life to resume, I just want to ask our listeners, how different are you going to be? I mean, it's not like switching on a tap again. If we've become so used to more than a year of intermittent lockdowns, you know, what are we going to be like when we finally emerge blinking into the light? I mean, it's often said that humans are social creatures, but will we still be then? I mean, how much more of this shit can we endure without undergoing changes in our sort of psyche and behaviors?
Well, I don't know. I mean, people were presumably quite restricted during the Second World War in terms of what they could do. You know, they had to all be well covered and ideally underground all night. But then in 1945, there was this huge kind of euphoric coming together. There was a massive baby boom and stuff. So, I mean, it could kind of go either way. I guess the sorts of restrictions that we've got now are kind of different to the ones that they had during the war. As in, there wasn't such an emphasis on isolation.
No, I mean, well, famously, all the Blitz nostalgists would tell us about how after a long night of getting bombed in a shelter, everybody would get together for a Scotch egg and just wax stoical.
Let good times roll.
Yeah, but I mean, after I don't know how many months of being told to fear our fellow humans, are we just going to be able to knock that off? Aren't we still going to be a bit like, get away from me?
Particularly people who've had the bug and it's been really bad for them. There might be an explosion in hypochondria that might in turn lead to more self-isolation just because people are scared of, you know, they just wonder what next bug is around the corner.
Yeah, what I can see is a sort of new age of stay away from me taking hold among the populace.
Now, more than ever, we need...
Radio. Commence blathering.
There's been a whole hoo-ha about how bad the messaging's been.
We think it's important to stay sane.
Radio.
When the fuck is this going to end?
Just trying to find something properly weird.
We need to find whatever it takes to get through this rotten fucking plague.
So the American situation has not moved on a great deal. Trump remains in the White House, not acknowledging defeat, although a steady drip of Republicans are, which seems
I wouldn't say it was steady. It's a very reluctant drip.
On the balance of probabilities, it feels like the transition is acquiring some momentum. And probably one weekend Trump will take a long trip to Florida and never return.
Isn't it weird that there doesn't really seem to be any kind of legal mechanism to discourage the constant filing of lawsuits, which are clearly vexatious and just designed to just waste time?
It's a wonderful country, especially for lawyers. And Rudy Giuliani, at the age of 130, having survived numerous scandals, Wasn't he like Jeffrey Epstein's right-hand man or something?
I can't remember. That might be libel. You should check that.
Okay, I retract. And he is apparently one of the only lawyers with sufficiently little dignity to be point man for these bizarre barrage of challenges. And just before recording, I saw that he'd gone into court and taken his mask off, saying that it was steaming up his spectacles. And why does anyone have to wear a mask anyway?
Well, that's fair enough.
so bringing gravitas to proceedings. So that does seem like it's sort of going in the right direction. And new man Biden, with characteristic understatement, says that more people may die of this pandemic.
That's true.
It's a safe bet, you'd imagine. But he will be in charge to sort of bring that that new sense of calm. But a lot of people will have pointed out that there are concerns that Trump's still got a couple of months in which to wreak havoc. Big story in the New York Times about his deliberation about whether this might be an opportune moment for a war with Iran, which all of the Republicans have been absolutely desperate for years. I mean, people like Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio and Ted
John
Cruz.
Bolton.
Oh, especially John
that's
Bolton.
That's the thing. Like, does he really want to give John Bolton exactly what he wants right now? I mean, he fucking hates him, doesn't he?
Yeah, and one of his most popular policies with his America First platform was that he would stop getting America embroiled in foreign misadventures. So it's counterintuitive.
One nice thing about his base, they generally don't want him to blow up the Middle East anymore.
Well, they don't want anyone. They don't want anything to do with the world. They don't see why they should have to do anything with these other countries that they regard as inferior. But then an interesting perspective on this: Trump has been bigging up this idea of an alternative TV channel to Fox, which was showed insufficient fealty and even had the temerity to call the election for Joe Biden.
Well, they called Arizona. Did they call Arizona?
Well, they did that, and then eventually the whole damn election. So he's been mouthing off at them a great deal, and all his supporters are very pissed off with them. And he's been very keen on the idea of starting a new sort of Trump TV channel that would just
what they all marching down the street shouting Fox News sucks.
I believe
there
so.
There was a big video of that. I mean, that's something we can all agree on.
Yeah, there's some gratitude, right? I mean, they couldn't have been a lot more obsequious, but then they sort of briefly succumbed to reality on election night, and then that's sort of burned their bridges. But so Trump has really been pushing this idea of starting his own TV channel, but by popular understanding, he doesn't have much money. And then one of his biggest backers, Bernie Marcus, the CEO of Home Depot, has suggested that he might potentially fund such a venture. And Bernie Marcus is most famed, his biggest political interest has been in confrontation with Iran. So he's poured millions of dollars into these hawkish think tanks, particularly the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, which all it does is every hour of every day is just basically be like, can we have a war with Iran yet? Can we have a war with Iran yet? Can we have a war with Iran yet? So if Trump wanted to get proper backing for Trump TV, the most viable means would be just to sort of nuke Tehran. Why not?
I mean, I think whether he does it through Trump TV or whether he does it through Twitter or even Parler, actually, if he were to jump onto Parler, I mean, how quickly do you think he'd triple the volume of the platform, like a week or something? I think it's possible for him to generate enough political power over the next 4 years for him to remain effectively above the law. Because people are talking about this cocktail of federal and state charges which could theoretically be brought against him when he leaves office, relating to the Trump family business and some peculiar bank loans which might be recoupable, and also his tax arrangements, obviously, which you might think would look extremely odd to ordinary members of the public, but it didn't affect his vote at all. If he's got tens of millions of heavily armed people who religiously believe that he's the only thing saving America from certain death, what then? Like, that, you know, there's an old saying, if the treason prosper, none dare call it treason.
Agreed. But I think there's also a risk that there might be some sort of young, shiny, thrusting nationalist figure with a who suddenly makes Trump seem a bit like yesterday's man. Because,
yeah,
I mean, albeit that he's got a certain showmanship that is beyond most conservative politicians, there is a big market for sort of red meat Republicanism and also civil war. So, I mean, it may or may not be him, but it seems pretty clear that his movement is around for the foreseeable.
Put it on and leave it on.
There's no such thing as a coronavirus.
The devastating result is that huge masses of heavy electricity start randomly falling out of wires and crashing onto anything below.
Well, that's very sensible, albeit hallucinatory advice.
It's a pack of lies.
There's flu around or whatever.
So what would you say all this here about fake news?
You're preying on losers.
This virus does not listen to stupidity.
Hey, don't buy into all that one, do you? What you're doing there is you're drinking an advert.
It's a building of a new fascism run by the mega corporations and the mega rich.
You're not going to get away with this.
Oh, yeah.
It's not cool to be weird.
Taking this back to the bug for a moment, The movement on this side of the pond has taken a hit in that Piers Corbyn's plan for a million-person march against lockdown, which was initially hilariously billed as the million mask march because people were going to wear the mask from Anonymous, but someone pointed out that isn't the whole point, we're against masks. And so less than 1,000 people showed up to this rally. Piers Corbyn got fined several thousand pounds.
And he got arrested as well. They managed to get an interview from him from the police cell.
The main conclusion of what we've happened today is that the police are anxious to arrest certain people who they deem to be organisers, but it's clear from the numbers turning up that we are undaunted, and the numbers are getting more and more around the country. And indeed today I specifically met people who said this was their first demonstration and they were going to carry on coming.
For a movement that seemed to be going places, it feels like it's suffered a loss of momentum. And I saw an Owen Jones video at one of the anti-lockdown rallies, and it was quite sort of tugs on your heartstrings a bit, because a lot of the people there would talk about how they'd be stigmatized and ostracized by sources like Bug Radio for their moronic beliefs. And so obviously one way to approach this whole crisis is just to say, let's follow all the rules. Let's keep our head down. Let's just be as good as possible all the time. Let's believe everything we're told. Not everyone is going to follow that. That's just natural. People are going to be skeptical. You want to have a skeptical public.
Do you think the conspiracy explosion recently is connected to the mental health crisis, which has accompanied lockdown? Because lots of counsellors and psychiatrists are reporting a surge in presentations over the last 6 months, and people haven't got much to do really except kind of go online and read loopy stuff. And I think actually Piers Corbyn would have a lot more luck in opposing lockdowns by simply saying, I mean, look, do you want to end up like me? I mean, like, that's what happens if you just stay at home and read loopy shit all day and don't talk to anybody normal for 50 years.
It would be a bit alarming if everybody unquestioningly followed everything to the letter. And you do want to have people delving into the new rules and the new claims. And it's good to have anti-authoritarian instincts, albeit that in most cases it feels like they're being channeled in the wrong direction. But I worry also, you know, there's got to be a bit of understanding as well for how people get to these different perspectives, except not when it sort of feeds into these other very sinister channels where, you know, you see Piers Corbyn rallies where it gets onto the, you know, the QAnon thing, where it's a lot less innocent and a lot more sinister.
Yeah. I read an interview with this psychotherapist called Paul Wilson, who seems to have deep dived into this quite a lot. And he says, historically, these things have often cropped up alongside increased economic stress or societal change, which we've sort of got both now. The invention of the printing press in the 15th century enabled the publication of Malleus Maleficarium, or the Hammer of Witches, in 1486. which is one of the most thumbed volumes ever, and helped to spread the witchcraft conspiracy theory across Europe, which fueled the witch trials and saw thousands of women drowned by the state on extremely shaky grounds. And also there's this focus on threats to children that you see in a lot of these things, particularly QAnon, which is very effective because who wants to be accused of being a paedophile apologist? So you just like, you leap onto a hashtag like Save the Children or something. You had a similar thing in the 1980s and the 1990s. There was this satanic ritual abuse panic, which warned about children being held in underground dungeons and scapegoated childcare workers. So most conspiracy theories are kind of cover versions or medleys, if you like, of old jazz standards. And, you know, QAnon is probably the biggest or sort of the biggest kind of amalgamation of these sort of themes.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a sort of builds on the shoulders of the giants of the movement that went before. Mm. But if Piers Corbyn and his followers have taken a setback, we can be assured that their movement will return. And when it does, you'll hear all about it right here on Bug Radio.
Well, that's all, folks. Congratulations on making it this far. If you'd like to threaten us, you can do so concisely on Twitter. That's @BugRadio2020. Or if you'd like to go into some detail about the various pieces of torture equipment you'd like to use or the music you'd like playing in the background, you can email us on bugradio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. As always, wash your hands and piss off.